This broadcast contains the current opinions of the host. The opinions are subject to change. The broadcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice or recommendations. Investors should obtain professional advice before making investment decisions. This is not a complete analysis of every material fact regarding any company, industry, or security. The information has been obtained from sources we consider to be reliable but cannot guarantee their accuracy. For more information about any companies discussed, please contact Baird. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and diversification does not ensure a profit or protect against loss. All investments carry some level of risk, including loss of principal. An investment cannot be made directly in an index. While Baird does not offer tax or legal advice, our financial advisors regularly work with clients' attorneys and tax professionals to help ensure that all phases of wealth management are addressed. Please consult your legal or tax professional for specific information. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of each fund carefully before investing. This and other information is found in the prospectus and summary prospectus. For a prospectus or summary prospectus, contact Baird directly at 866-442-2473. Please read the prospectus or summary prospectus carefully before investing. Brokered CDs differ from CDs issued by banks directly to a customer. Those differences should be studied carefully before investing. This broadcast may not be reproduced without expressed permission of Baird. Copyright 2023 Robert W. Baird & Company Incorporated. Member SIPC. All right reserved.
Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to this week's edition of Your Money and You, presented by Baird. My name is Corey Utes. I'm a certified financial planner, a chartered life underwriter, and a senior vice president at Baird. It's wonderful to spend the next hour with you. I'm joined today by Jamie Meredith. Jamie and I are here to answer any questions that you have regarding your investments. If you have a question, you can give us a call at 866-391-1020. Or you can email us, yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. Let me start with a quote this morning. In my 25 years in the mutual fund business, I have never known a good time to invest. There are always a dozen good reasons why it makes sense to wait. Today is no exception. Interest rates, the president, a cartel that's controlling the price of energy worldwide, constant strife in the Middle East, excessive government regulations, oppressive tax rates, and a Congress that is more a part of the problem than part of the solution. No sane person would invest under these circumstances, unless he wanted to take advantage of an opportunity. I have found over the years that market bottoms occur when there are a great many problems and questions for which there are no solutions or answers. Market tops usually occur when there are no problems to be solved or questions to be answered. That was in the May issue of Financial Planner magazine. But it was the May issue of 1981, not today. With that as our backdrop, good morning, Jamie. Can you take us through the week?
Absolutely. Well, that's a great introduction because the latest crisis has been averted, and the House and the Senate has agreed to a stopgap measure that will allow for the government to remain funded through mid-November, kicking the can down the road. Well, that takes a little bit of pressure off of the markets because September historically has been a lousy month for the stock market, and on average, it is one of the worst months of the year, if not the worst month of the year, depending on which year, and this September has been no different. We'll talk about the potential impact of a shutdown a bit later, but first, let's look at the numbers. As of the close on Friday, the Dow was down for the week, 1.3%. For the month, 3.5%. Year to date, the Dow is up a scant 1%. The S&P was down 0.75% for the week, almost 5% for the month, 4.87% for the month. Year to date, still up a pretty respectable 11.68%. NASDAQ was flat to slightly positive for the week, but got clobbered month to date, down almost 6%. Year to date, still up a whopping 26.3%. Economic data this week was mixed, not terrible, but was mixed. Housing data, well, it was good or bad, depending on whether you were a buyer or a seller or a builder. home prices were essentially flat, ticked a little bit higher. This puts a pause on the last several declines of house prices and obviously impacts affordability. We see new home sales dropped much more than expected, and pending home sales basically fell out of bed, had a big drop. Strategus reports that housing affordability is as low as it's been since 1990, so a really challenging time for folks to buy a home. Now, depending on where you are in the country, is going to determine that affordability. The area where house prices increased the most was the Chicago area, and followed next by Cleveland. Both of those were right around a 4% increase. On the flip side, the place where house prices have dropped the most, Las Vegas, down 7.3%, Phoenix, 6.6%, San Francisco, 6.3%. Seattle, 5.5%. So the West Coast seems to be suffering more than the East Coast. If you're looking for a house, somewhere to buy, maybe check out the left side of the country instead of the right. GDP came out, another revision. It was unchanged. Expectations were a slight tick higher, but it was unchanged. Durable good orders were stronger than expected, based on a boost of military spending. Consumer confidence dipped a bit, but consumer sentiment improved. Could be attributed to unemployment remained very, very strong. The employment market remains very strong. Unemployment barely budged. Personal income rose. Spending didn't climb as much as expected, but spending was up mainly on higher fuel costs. All eyes last week were on the Fed's favorite inflation index, the PCE, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, came in higher than last month, but slightly better than expected. Gas prices, again, were to blame, pushed the index higher. But core inflation, which pulls out very volatile measures of food and fuel, was at a near two-year low, so good news there. Now, as we come to the end of the quarter, we head back into earnings season. We won't get the first numbers for a few more weeks, but FactSet, a big data organization that tracks this, expects fourth quarter earnings, the third quarter earnings that we're in right now, third quarter earnings to decline. This quarter's earnings are expected to come in just shy of flat at 0.1% negative. This is an improvement from the estimate as of the end of the last quarter, which expected a 0.4% decline. So things got a little bit better. And speaking of better, here is some other good news. Things are expected to look much better moving forward. Earnings are expected to rise 8.3% next quarter and more than 12% for the first half of 2024. So things are looking positive ahead. Now, the other big thing this week, rates. Interest rates continue to climb. Average U.S. mortgage rates reaches the highest point in nearly 23 years, hitting 7.31%. On average. The yield curve steepened again. There are an increasing number of voices that say we may see 5% across the board. So short-term rates are in the fives, long-term rates are in the fours, but a number of people are saying that we may see rates across the board above 5% before this is all done. So short-term rates were pretty flat this week. The one-month jumped a bit to 5.56. The two-year dropped a bit to just above 5%. The 10-year jumped 15 basis points to 4.59. And the 20-year seems to be a bit of a high spot when you project out the future rates. The 20-year is at 4.92. Well, that's a pretty high number, not as good as short-term rates, but think about it. If inflation remains under control and rates eventually may be on the decline, would it make sense to take a portion of your portfolio and lock in 5% for the next 20 years? 2 years ago, you probably would have given a pinky finger to lock in 5% for the next 20 years. But might be time, and it's coming up soon. I don't think we have to rush too much, but we've talked about this on the show last couple of weeks. Pretty soon, we're probably getting to the point in which you may want to look beyond those very attractive short-term yields and start locking in some modestly attractive long-term yields. So what will the future of interest rates look like? Well, we don't really know, but one of my favorite websites, FedWatch, from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, says that the market's putting about a 60% chance that the Fed is done raising rates, but there's still a substantial 30% chance that we could get one more rate increase. Looking forward, the markets think it won't be until next summer before we see a material change downward in interest rates by the end of the year. Predictions are that interest rates could fall back into the 4% range. So again, think about that. That 20-year treasury close to 5%, if rates fall back to 4%, maybe a happy person for the next 20 years. Well, the impact of these rates have been good for savers. First time since data was tracked all the way back in 1994, first time that bank deposits have dropped year over year, as savers are brave enough to pull funds from bank accounts into higher yielding money markets. So just as an interesting trivia idea, how much money is in U.S. banks? Well, the number is $17.3 trillion, and that's down 4.8% from last year. So your next cocktail party, you can impress people with your useless knowledge that there's $17 trillion in banks. Well, I've got a bit more on interest rates, but I know, Corey, we're against the break. Why don't you take us through the break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about more rates and a lot more things to talk about.
That sounds good. 866-391-1020 here in the studio. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money and You. My name's Corey Utes. I'm here with Jamie Meredith. Jamie's taking your calls for the day. We've got a couple emails in the email bank, yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com, or you can reach us 866-391-1020. We were talking about interest rates, so Jamie, continue in that vein, please.
Yeah, so rates, again, have been climbing over the last month. September has been painful for both the stock market and the bond market. And one of those areas has been municipal bonds. Now, we've been a big fan of municipal bonds, and I think, Corey, we're all in the same area here, that we continue to be a big fan of municipal bonds.
That's right.
But it's been a painful time for bond owners. In September, municipal bonds in aggregate has dropped about 3%, and that is data from Bloomberg. That's the biggest monthly drop since this time last year, when municipal bonds dropped 3.8%. Now, why is that? Well, yields on 10-year munis in aggregate have jumped almost 50 basis points since just September 20th. And that was after a lot of investors sold bonds as they digested the Fed's measure message that they would keep rates higher for longer. Again, I think some of that money is falling into very attractive short-term yields. But again, don't be too focused on the foot ahead. You may want to look at the mile ahead and make those changes. But investors yanked out $1.2 billion from municipal bonds in the week ended this past Wednesday, according to Lipper. So don't be surprised when you get your next statement if you have municipal bonds, if your prices are lower. But I think municipal bonds still make great sense, especially for folks in the highest tax brackets. Don't forget, in 2025, if Congress does nothing, tax rates are going to go up by about 2 to 3 percentage points for each bracket. So if you are in that higher tax bracket, municipal bonds still probably make a great deal of sense. But folks in a lower tax bracket, again, treasuries are a wonderful thing. So who has the highest interest rates in the world? This will go, again, with useless knowledge with that $17 billion in banks. But it is Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe's central bank has decided to keep their interest rates rates for a second month in a row at 150%. Well, that does damage. Zimbabwe's currency has plunged about 85% against the dollar between May and June. So just in 1 month, Zimbabwe's currency has plummeted. So not a good time to be a Zimbabwean. Is that what you say? I'm not sure.
I think so.
I know, Corey, we've got a couple email questions piling up, but I wanted to touch a little bit on some big changes in retail. And it has to do really with prices and theft. So that seems to be impacting. Aldi has come out with a worldwide study, and they have found that consumers are shifting from retail brands to store brands. So the generics, as we used to say, that is becoming a big trend. Consumers are getting squeezed with higher prices, and so they are trying to save money going to that consumer brand or that store brand. And we're also seeing, again, the impact of theft. That's been in the news a lot. A lot of retailers are changing not only stores, they're closing stores, but they're changing hours to try to blunt the blow of theft. Theft now has cost retailers 1.6% of sales. That's up 1.4% from 2021. Doesn't sound like a lot, but a lot of retailers have very, very thin margins. You may see some grocery stores with margins as low as, say, 2%. Other retailers have pretty thin margins. So 1.6% on a 2% profit margin is very, very painful. So 28% of retailers have said they have closed stores, and 45% of retailers said they have pared back operating hours. 30% they said they have reduced the availability of products. So a lot more things are locked into shelves, which just makes an inconvenient shopping experience. Another interesting trend, smartphone sales down 22% in the second quarter, and that's interesting because Apple had come up with their new phone, so maybe we're not as addictive to our phones as we have been in the past. A couple other things. Bad news, Corey, I don't know if you've seen this, but I know you're not related, but the Utz snack company has decided to close down the Pennsylvania manufacturing plant. So similar name, unrelated, but I know you've always had a fond attachment to that brand of snack food, but unfortunately it won't be made in Pennsylvania anymore. Two last interesting things before we'll see if we can squish in an email, or maybe we'll just lead to the break. Toys R Us is coming back to life. So Toys R Us was bought out of bankruptcy from a company called WHP Global. And WHP Global plans to open 24 flagship stores across the United States starting next year. So we'll see Jeffrey the Giraffe and you know, the Shangri-La for kids everywhere. So Toys R Us is back in business. And speaking of toys, as we approach the holidays, Macy's and Toys R Us have announced the hot toy list for 2023. Now, my kids are older now, so a lot of these names are foreign to me, but if you have a two-year-old, the hot toy is expected to be the Ultimate Shipwreck playset. If you have a also the ride on sliding car baby ride with horn, music, lights, and stores, that's supposed to be hot for two-year-olds. 3 to 4 year olds, the Princess Ella grow up doll, and also, and this sounds very exciting, the Stardust 15-piece set. If you have 5 to 7 year olds, Baby Yoda, Grogu, apparently is going to be the hot toy this year, with a projector that looks like R2-D2, and for the Disney fans, Little Mermaid Ariel from the live Disney show is the hot toy. A little bit older, 8 to 12 years, Lego Star Wars, good solid choice there. And the activity power bracelet making machine. Also, go get that before it's sold out. So for folks planning for Christmas, those are the hot toys this year. So got a bit more, Corey, but I'll hand things over as we slowly go into the break.
That's right. I think we do have time. We can get to Rich in Peters Township. His question is on Treasury, iBond, website stuff. They do post the interest earned to his iBond. He's asking, is that interest compounded or does the iBond pay simple interest?
It is, that's a good technical question. It is, I believe, compounded on a monthly basis. So there were a few questions in the past on how interest rates get paid. And the website isn't entirely clear, but it appears that it accrues on a daily basis as of the first of the month. So if you buy the iBond on the 15th of the month, your interest accrual starts on the first of the month, but also on the back end, on the flip side from that, if you sell your iBond, you only get interest through the first of the month. But it does, the Treasury, now we've been in digging into this to try to answer some previous questions. Again, Treasury Direct doesn't go into a lot of detail, and it seems to be some old math from, 50, 60, 70 years ago from when interest savings bonds were first introduced, but it does appear to be a daily accrual on a monthly starting point, so it would be compounded. So it's not simple interest. And for those not math-minded people, one of the greatest things about investing is that compound interest is earning money on your money. So that's Einstein had a famous quote that said, the greatest invention of mankind has been compound interest. So to be able to earn money on your money, reinvest that money, that's one of the wonderful things. And keeping that money in savings bonds, you do get that compounding. I'm about 99% sure.
All right. Thank you. If you have questions regarding your investments for Jamie, please give us a call. The number here in the studio, 866-391-1020. You can also email us yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money and You. My name's Corey Utes. I'm here with Jamie Meredith. Jamie's taking your calls for today. Jamie, we talked a lot about the consumer there in the opening section. You talked about housing affordability and some Christmas ideas, and there's certainly been some talk on the consumer and their balance sheet. Can they keep up with the inflationary pressure? Credit card balances topped $1 trillion earlier this year, but household debt service as a percentage of income actually dropped for the second quarter in a row in the first half of this year, and it remains well below its long-term average. So that seems to be a good sign for the market. We were talking about iBonds right before the break. Do you have a specific, when people cash in, when they should cash in those iBonds, Jamie?
Yeah, it's a good question. And iBonds are what made iBonds really a bit of a unicorn investment was the speed in which we saw inflation. So iBond, the rate of iBonds based on the six-month change of inflation. So if we see inflation rise over a long period of time, well, iBonds may not be that attractive. It only happened that we saw a big jump in inflation in a very short period of time. Now, what we're probably going to see ahead, and nobody knows, but what we're probably going to see ahead is rates staying at, or prices staying at a particular level, or what we're calling disinflation, that inflation erasing. Both of those things are bad for iBonds. So even if gasoline prices stay at $4 a gallon, as long as it doesn't go up to $8 a gallon, you're probably not going to see a change in iBonds. So we're probably going to see those iBond rates beginning to drop, and comparing to other short-term rates and even some of those long-term rates, I-bonds are going to be less and less attractive. So what do you do? Well, we're probably at or very close to the point in which it makes sense to cash in those I-bonds. And to follow up on Rich's question on simple versus compound, that may not be even something you have to worry about with I-bonds, because I think those rates are going to be very unattractive again going forward. So the big question is, do you cash it out right now? My gut says, well, wait for two more months. And if you cash it out in January, you can put it on your basically 2025 check to the government. If you cash it out now, you're going to have to pay for it in April of 2024. Although, surprisingly, I did a little preliminary math, and I want to go back and check the numbers, but based on my my initial back-of-the-napkin calculations, it might be slightly more beneficial to cash I-bonds out today, reinvest those at that higher money market rate. So if you can cash in something at 4.3 and reinvest higher than 5, there might be a slight advantage to do that. But if you don't want to worry about taxes this year, maybe push it off till next year. Just one last follow-up to Rich's question. He talked about simple versus compound on longer-term treasuries. Well, one thing to keep in mind, that bonds pay you interest. If you own an individual bond, you can't really reinvest those coupon payments, because they usually aren't very big. So if you invested $100,000 into a treasury and you're going to get a $2,500 check, well, you're probably not going to turn around and buy a $2,500 treasury bond after the end of 3 or 4 years. You'd probably have dozens upon dozens of treasury bonds. So it's a little bit harder to reinvest bonds. So one thing to keep in mind when you hear things like yield to maturity, all of those numbers assume you reinvest those interest payments, the cash you receive, at the rate of the bond. But in reality, it's harder and harder to do that. So I might even say bonds would pay simple interest when you're doing kind of portfolio construction. Now, bond mutual funds are a little bit different. You can easily reinvest that, but individual bonds, a little harder to reinvest. So
that makes a lot of sense.
Rich.
Yeah. I know we've got some more stuff that we want to talk about on government shutdowns, but before we do that, let's go to Joe in Greensburg. He's got a question on annuities. Joe, go ahead.
His opinion's worth a grain of salt.
Oh, all right. Well, we seem to have lost Joe there. So I guess Joe wasn't happy with our opinion on annuities. And, you know, to kind of follow up with that, annuities are something that we always say investors should be cautious with. They're very, 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 very complex. There are some good annuities out there, and I think most of us implement annuities where it makes sense, but annuities should be applied with a painter's brush, not that big four-inch house painter. And I think the problem that many of us have is there's a lot of annuities out there that I probably would say they're nothing more than commission machines. They pay very, very high commissions. They allow people in our role to earn a heck of a lot of money on our clients. But again, there's some very high quality annuity companies out there, and we utilize them where it makes sense. But they're very, very complex. The promises and the guarantees are often misexplained and misunderstood. So be very, very, very careful
before you buy an annuity. Understand the surrender charges. Ask, well, what do you make on this? And don't settle for the answer, well, you don't pay me, the annuity company pays me. Find out what your advisor earns, and if your advisor earns more than you do, maybe there's a better product out there. So annuities aren't inherently evil, but unfortunately there are some inherently evil people that sell annuities. Just be very, very, very careful.
So, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, as with everything else, buyer beware, and just make sure you understand what you own, because they're terribly complex and, often misunderstood until after you buy it, and then you can't do anything about it.
We've got about 4 minutes till the break. Let's go back to the government shutdown stuff that was averted. Any data on government shutdowns that we need to know, Jamie?
Yeah, there's been some interesting thing. Our partners, Strategus, has found that government shutdowns have little impact on the stock market, but they do in the long term, but in the short term, they do primarily impact kind of quality of life things. And that's one of the things that we would want to be careful for. Certainly, there's a lot of government workers that aren't going to get paid. Now, they will get paid back, but imagine not getting a paycheck for a month or 2 months. And again, you're going to get that back pay, but you still need to pay utilities. You still need to pay your mortgage. And also, people on various government programs may get delays in their payments. Now, Social Security will be safe. Medicare and Medicaid will be safe, but applications could be delayed. So if there is a government shutdown and you are approaching Social Security age, retiring, maybe turning that on, maybe reaching 65, Medicare, getting that started, your application could be delayed because both of those organizations will be working on a skeleton crew. Now, the mail the mail service, the Postal Service, almost runs as an independent entity within the government, so that would be interrupted. But if you travel, you should expect travel delays, not only from the FAA, air traffic controllers. Again, they're considered emergency workers, but they're not going to get a paycheck, so you might have a lot of sick days being called in. Same thing with TSA. So those folks would be required to go to work, but they wouldn't get paid. So if you're not going to get paid for a couple weeks, couple months, you may not be too excited to hop out of bed and help people. So if you're traveling, keep that in mind. IRS services. So we're coming up. We got a couple months, but we're coming up to tax time. The IRS would be impacted as well. So you may see some delays in tax returns and tax processing. Infrastructure projects, highways and things like that are going to get delayed. Medicare drug price negotiation, that will be put on hold. Student loan repayments are expected to be not impacted. But so it would be primarily a frustration for those of us not in the government, a whole lot of stress for folks in the government, but in the grand scheme of things, governing by crisis is not typically the most efficient way to govern. So I think we all want our government officials, let's get this fixed and let's not have this hanging over us. So again, the long-term impact should be minimal. Government employees, people depending on governmental services, you will get all of that money back, but it's going to be a frustrating period between when your bills are due and when you're going to get repaid. So long term, not a big impact on the economy. Short term, Janet Yellen came out, said could impact GDP by a few decimal places, but again, that would beef up in the future. So I know we're coming up against the break, and we just got a couple callers on the line, so we'll ask them to please be patient. And I guess, Corey, I'll take us through the break. If you got a question for us here in the studio, 866-391-1020, send us an email, yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com. We've got a few of those piling up we want to get to, but again, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money and You. My name's Corey Utz. I'm here with Jamie Meredith. Jamie's taking your calls for the day. 866-391-1020 if you've got any questions on finances. We've got Dave in Scott Township. Dave, you're on Your Money and You. What's your question for Jamie?
Thank you. I was just wondering, they're calling for commercial real estate kind of the collapse. What does the investor do to protect himself with his investments when that and if that occurs?
Yeah, that's a good question, Dave, and certainly commercial real estate, I think it's going to hinge a lot on employers' decisions to return to work, not return to work. You look at downtown Pittsburgh, our parking garage right next to our headquarters office there. Pre-pandemic, if you weren't in by 8 o'clock, you weren't getting a spot. But now it's only about half filled. Some days it gets filled, but for the most part, it's only about half filled. So by that very loose measure, I would say only about 50% of the workers are in downtown Pittsburgh as they were pre-pandemic. Again, not terribly accurate, but kind of gives you a gauge. So you look at a big skyscraper or even a more modest 3-4-story building, that's an expensive hunk of concrete to take care of. You've got to maintain it, update it. You owe taxes on that. You know, electricity bills. You can't just turn off electricity. And if you aren't getting renters to cover that, then that's negatively cash flowing. So if you already own these properties, there's not a whole lot of good opportunities out there. Right now, expectations are for the negative, things are going to get worse before they get better. Now, every day, there's more and more headlines saying that companies are demanding their workers come back into the office. And so that should help for retail or commercial real estate. But it is a challenge. Every day, you go on the Internet, you go to any financial website, and it'll say, hey, this wonderful security is yielding 12%, 10%. A lot of that is commercial real estate, these things called REITs. And I think, Corey, we've all experienced the bad side of REITs where many of them are illiquid. You can't get out of them even if you wanted. And sometimes they do give you an opportunity to get out, but they usually are at prices below book value. So, right. I wish I had a good answer there. I think what you should probably do is look at your portfolio, try to make some assumptions. Well, how big of a portion of your portfolio is this? Number one, the easy thing, I probably wouldn't reinvest at this point. I think taking some of those dividends, if you are reinvesting it, then I'd probably have those paid in cash. And I would maybe look at your overall situation and say, all right, if I can't sell these investments or if the valuations are down for the foreseeable future or, heaven forbid, some of the commercial real estate that you own, maybe they do go belly up. Maybe take 10%, 20%, half of those investments. If they do go belly up, what are you going to do then? Not saying that you're going to see those investments go belly up, but I think it makes sense to prepare for that and say, well, what is the impact on my cash flow? What are some things I'm going to have to worry about if these things happen? So you can just be prepared. Maybe it makes sense to hold more cash in anticipation of some of those things happening, that loss of income. But once you're in, it's a challenging thing to get out because it's kind of like a timeshare. They sound great before you go in, and then when they own it and you realize it might not be as great. That's these REITs and these high-yielding commercial properties are very, very similar to that. So, Corey, I don't know. Can you think of anything I haven't thought of? But I think I would probably advise caution going in. But if you are in, I'm not sure if there's a whole lot of great ways to get out and not take a bit of a hit.
Well, the other thing, if you're worried about that coming to fruition and you're looking at your investment portfolio, that's one of the filters that you can use to think about which companies I want to invest. If real estate holdings is a large portion of their budget, that certainly hurts profits, right? And maybe you're looking at companies that don't have a large footprint if you're worried about that sort of thing.
Yeah, so Dave, I would say maybe look at the other parts of your portfolio and try to reduce exposure to real estate, commercial real estate, as much as you can. But I would pay close attention to what you own. Maybe look for some opportunities. If it is liquid, you may want to sell it, take the loss, and put that money elsewhere. If it is illiquid, you may want to look for some opportunities to cash out. You got to evaluate the cash out price. If you're only getting 20 cents on the dollar, maybe you roll the dice and stick with it. So, Dave, I wish I had some better answers for you, but it's a bit of a pickle.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be a challenge.
Tough call, thanks for your help.
Appreciate it, Dave. We've got one other email question that I've been wanting to get to. There were two articles this week that kind of caught my eye. One was about us sending the panda bears back to China here. And the other one, I don't know if you saw this, Jamie, but there was an article talking about Costco selling gold bars, and Rod makes the analogy that J.P. Morgan said he knew a crash was coming when his cab driver had a stock tip for him. He asks, do you see any parallels between the two?
Yeah, that's it's a great story from J.P. Morgan there, and I think... I don't know if I would be as cautious, but certainly he brings up a good point. I remember the last time gold peaked, and when we were Heffron, the investment advisory team almost sold gold to the day. I would think even those folks would admit that was more luck than timing. But I remember back when gold peaked, every other commercial on TV, radio, on the internet was gold, 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 gold. And when you see that just blasted in your face, I think it is time to get out. People love gold. I always say, well, the difference between gold and buying a company is a company is a magic box that spits out money. Gold is a hunk of metal, and you hope that somebody buys it off of you for more than what you paid for it. In our world, they call that the greater fool theory. But gold right now does have some potential attractiveness. All gold in the whole world is traded in U.S. dollars. The dollar is expected to decline over the future, and there's a whole bunch of reasons why that is. But when you have something traded in dollars, if the dollar declines, then you need more dollars to represent the same chunk of that unit. So if the dollar declines, gold is expected to appreciate. But the dollar has been climbing a bit. Gold is may flip negative this year. So as with everything else, it is volatile. But I don't think gold is going to collapse. I've never been a huge gold bug, but there may be some opportunity if the dollar does decline. If our interest rates slow down, rest of the world increases interest rates, we may see some decline in the dollar. So I wouldn't panic, I would use gold sparingly in a portfolio.
That makes sense. Well, we're about a minute up against the clock. I'd like to thank all of our callers for tuning in today. I'd like to thank Jamie for walking them through this last week of the investment stuff. And we appreciate you listening. Your Money and You, presented by Baird. Have a great week.
Thanks for joining us for Your Money and You, sponsored by Baird. If you have any questions, you can email us at yourmoneyandyou@rwbaird.com or contact Baird at rwbaird.com. That's rwbaird.com.